Bar.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to the This and That podcast with Jeff and Gretchen. Show number. What show number do you know?
78.
You're very good. But I think we reviewed that before the show. Can you imagine we've done 78 shows? Actually, you haven't done.
I have not, but you have, Jeff.
But you have done probably 50 or so.
Have I?
I'll have to look back and see when you started.
Hmm.
I don't remember, but you've done a lot.
Wow. Well, we've certainly taken it in a different direction. It's not the entertainment that it used to be.
It's not the comedy fun anymore. Now it's just the reporting fun. We report the news.
Well, we comment on the news that we find interesting.
Yeah, I guess we don't report it. But we do have a segment in this particular show where Gretchen and I take the portable mics out to the new Cowboy Stadium tour. We have some good observations there. I still have to edit that material, which means that this show may not get out. It's Sunday. What is the date?
August 16th.
Mm-hmm. So, just to let you know what the delay will be. And our number, if you care to call and leave a voice message with us, it's 206-333-1003. That number again, 206-333-1003. I don't know why I say it funny like that. It just sounds like Joe Broadcaster.
That's you.
Yeah. You know, I found some, going through my podcasting material, because we haven't done this as frequently as we should. Mostly Gretchen's fault.
Oh, yes. All my fault.
Actually, when we did our Cowboy Stadium tour, we were supposed to podcast afterwards, and that tour went forever.
It was a long tour.
Oh, my God.
It was
so burned out.
Long tour.
I was so burned out by the time. So if there are any local people here that want to take the Cowboys tour, it's definitely cool, you know. But go first thing in the day for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. One, there's no air conditioning in there, except for a couple places. So it does get warm. And then the second reason is just to avoid some lines.
Mm-hmm. Very long lines.
Very long lines. So what's been going on?
Well, lots of what's going on.
Yeah?
Yeah. So today is exactly 40 years ago, the anniversary of Woodstock, which I think I mentioned last time.
Yes.
That it was coming up, because there were lots of anniversaries coming up. The anniversary of the Manson killings about a week ago. And then the last 3 days has been Woodstock, exactly 40 years ago.
Yes.
Where 400,000 people a little bit older than us descended on a farm in upstate New York for 3 days of peace and love. And pretty much, what do you think? Did they change the world? That was their goal.
I don't think they changed the world. I don't know. I mean, you know, there's a lot of anti-war, anti-Vietnam War stuff going on.
They said they tried.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of articles on it, and just in case you haven't noticed, here come 8 new books all about Woodstock, plus a new TV documentary, a new Hollywood movie by Ang Lee, and a newly remastered DVD of the old documentary.
Wow. Well, I can't
talk about capitalizing on a historic music event.
I guess I can't wait till the new movie, because Ang Lee is very, very good.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they've been advertising it, and I think it's coming August 28th. And so some of the comments that I've been reading, everybody who attended, afterwards, they went home, they cut their hair. They didn't stop the war in Vietnam, not even for a week. People left the farm, cut their hair, put on suits and ties, pantsuits and sensible shoes, and went on to become doctors, cops, TV executives, mothers, fathers.
So they went to Woodstock and they came back, and the next day, say Monday,
that's right.
They put on their suits?
No, not maybe exactly Monday, but
okay.
It is that generation now, and they're pretty much grandparents. And I actually have a friend who is roughly in that age, and she just did become a grandmother.
Wow.
She's about 9 years older than me, which isn't, you know, that's not that far off, right? And she did become grandmothers. And so some of the articles are saying, you know, really, we didn't do it, but we tried. And then some people are saying, enough about us, stop it. In the 70s documentary, apparently we did not see all the kids ingesting the bad acid and requiring medical treatment, or in the freakout tent, or the Grateful Dead almost electrocuted on stage during a downpour.
Wow.
Or the Stone musicians traveling in the helicopters that vomited on the crowds below.
Oh, cool.
Or that two festival organizers wound up suing each other and that there were 80 lawsuits in all.
Wow.
Which I thought was really pretty
amazing.
Even
back then, they had a lot of lawsuits.
Even back then, yeah. Huh. Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
So, and it was $18 for 3 days worth of tickets.
Oh, that's
just
too expensive.
That was the cost of it. So everybody camped in the mud and rain for 3 days. And so if you were a kid going then and you were telling your parents what you were going to do, I thought this was an interesting commentary. Today, you would have to go out the door with your GPS-equipped family SUV, with your SPF 50 to guard against sunburn, your 100% DEET spray to guard against Lyme disease, your electro-enhanced bottled water for dehydration, condoms, right? This is all pretty true. A North Face tent to ensure privacy, an EMS parka to guard against rain, and a non-negotiable directive to check in via text message every hour. So parents who grew up at Woodstock are now this overprotective parent generation, risk adverse. What do we think? Is that true? Is the world more dangerous now than it was in 1969? Is that true?
I don't know. Some say it is.
Yeah, some say it is. And we've spent the last, 8 years thinking that our brother sitting next to us is a bomber who's out to kill us.
He ain't heavy.
Yeah.
He's my brother.
So I just thought it was interesting. It's like, so you can judge from yourself with the 8 books and the documentary and the new movie. And
come on, people now.
Yeah, but XM Sirius is playing the whole show, recreating it all.
Everybody get together. We got to love one another right now.
There you go.
See?
Mm-hmm.
That's what Woodstock was about.
Yeah.
Well, this is how far we've come from Woodstock. You know what the top 10 strange Apple iPhone and iPhone Touch applications are? I don't know where this is from, actually. I didn't put the reference, so. Oh, well, I didn't do a good job of reporting. Something seems to be kind of funny with my mic right now, but I guess we'll have to power through it. First one is called iFart.
Oh, that's right. And I talked about that.
I download. Oh, yeah. So you talked about that one.
I did talk about that. If you're app-noxious.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a new word in our vocabulary, thanks to the iPhone.
Yeah, I downloaded that one. And
you downloaded iFart?
Yeah, there's like 50 different fart sounds you can play from it with just a touch of a button. So
why do I have a feeling?
It amused me for 5 minutes and then I deleted it.
Why do we think that one appeals to men? Why do I have a feeling that about 95% of people downloading that would be men?
I don't know why men think farts are funny, but we do.
I don't know either. I just, God.
But we do. We don't outgrow it.
Now, does that cost money to do that? Did you actually have to pay for that?
No, that one was free.
Oh.
I mean, there are a few fart applications. I think some cost money, but this one that I downloaded was free.
Mm-hmm.
And it was boring. Like I said, it was fun for 5 minutes.
Some people have made that their ringtone. Have you heard that?
Oh, that's
so if you make the fart sound your ringtone, and then somebody's phone goes off. And
that doesn't sound very professional at all.
Can you imagine if you were on a date and your date phone did that? Oh, my Lord.
Would you be impressed with your date?
I think that would probably be the end of the date right there. But then again, I'm old.
No, really, that was my phone.
Yeah, right. And you have didn't from fart sounds for your friends that call, right?
Exactly. Oh, there's that
so-and-so.
Dude.
Yeah. There's my mom.
Oh, mom's calling me. Sorry, mom. All right. Another one is called My Girl's Day. And this is there's dozens of menstruation calendar apps available through iTunes. But this period tracker appears to be designed with men in mind so they can keep abreast their girlfriend's impending mood swings. So I do have a funny thing about that. My last girlfriend and I did share a Google Calendar together. And at the beginning, we did make sure that her cycles were on that shared calendar. But it was good because then I would have an expectation of like, it wasn't necessarily mood swings, but it was expectations of other things. I found it helpful,
So now you can get one of many apps to help you remember that.
Yeah, which is kind of silly because you can just use shared Google calendars or something like that for that. So Bullet Fight is a must for every self-regulating marksman. This app helps gunmen line up a clear shot of their target by calculating factors such as prevailing wind, ammunition type, and distance to the target. iBeer, this app, which was at the center of a legal battle, turns the iPhone or iPod Touch into a virtual pint glass. you tip the device to your lips to mimic gulping down the foamy suds. So I don't know why that one
And then you turn on the fart app.
Yeah. Yes. So this app was the center of a legal battle. I didn't look up the legal battle, but I'm guessing maybe there
was another one that probably did something similar.
Yeah, maybe. Mm. Well, I was thinking also maybe protection of kids or something.
Mm.
There's a dog whistler that apparently claims to be able to make frequencies that are beyond what humans can hear, but I question whether the iPhone can really generate those of high frequencies.
Hmm.
Anything else interesting here? This one actually looks pretty useful, called Influenza. Get swine flu alerts from the Center of Disease Control, push straight to your iPhone, and you'll have advanced warning of when to bed down on your nuclear bunker. But you know what? That's another thing I find interesting and useful about Facebook. This is just a little thing. In the last week or so, I've probably had 3 or 4 friends. And by the way, excuse the microphone quality right now. I don't know what's going on. I probably have a bad wire. But 3 or 4 friends that have said, oh, I've got the flu, I'm sick. Which is really kind of viral.
Yeah.
Way of saying, hey, there's something out there. And so I'm using more hand washing now.
Hmm, really?
Yeah, just interesting, you know? So.
That is interesting.
You should be on Facebook.
Well, I don't think that means it's swine flu, though.
Not swine flu, but I mean, it does mean there's something in the air and be a little bit more guarded.
Uh-huh, that's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
When more than one of your friends have that. Mm-hmm. Did I mention that Archie ended up with Veronica instead of Betty?
What are you talking about?
The cartoon Archie?
Yeah.
I can't remember. This is old. But a couple months ago, Archie, the creators of the Archie comic book series, decided that he was going to end up with Veronica because it was always a three-way love pyramid that was not resolved. And Veronica was the sultry brunette, the sexy outgoing one. Uh-huh. And Betty was the girl next door blonde.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
I always liked Betty when I was younger.
And who did he end up with?
Veronica. So that made the wire quite a bit a couple months ago. But I think most people don't really care about Archie anymore. You know, it's kind of an old comic, but
it is. Wow.
I think they were trying to generate new buzz and new interest by making this whole.
I bet there's an app for that.
Yeah, there probably is. There's an app for everything.
So how much do you pay for the apps? Are they mainly all free?
There's a lot of them that are free. Like there's a Facebook mobile that's free, that's very useful. One of the apps that generally people really like is Shazam. That's the one that you hold it up to music and it'll tell you what's playing. That's free.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff out there that's free. But there's also stuff that costs money. Probably the most expensive one I bought was a guitar application. And what it does, it's a tuner, first of all, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also... you know how you can buy a book with all the chord positions? This has got them all in a very easy-to-use interface, all the chord positions.
Wow.
And so I bought that for like $10. And it's a useful app.
And
it really is.
It's just a $10 one-time fee?
Yeah, exactly.
Huh. Interesting.
So they kind of vary. You know, basically, if you wanted to, you get the Apple API, and if you had the talent and had an idea, you could create your own app and, you know, create a charge for it through the iTunes store. And iTunes takes, you know, some certain percentage of that. I don't know what percentage, probably 50 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend, a guy I used to work with, who has created 2 applications for children. And I don't know how he's doing. I think they charge $2 or something for it. And I know the first application, it was just... It shows you different black and white images.
Supposedly proven to
stimulate a child's brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's what babies see in black
and
white. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and then he's coming up with another one I just saw on his Facebook. Again, geared towards sort of infants. I think that's where, since they've got an infant, I think that's where their interests lie now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got, you know, he's got the programming chops, so. I don't think he's quitting his day job.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it might be a fun little supplement of money. It'd be interesting to actually find out kind of how many he sold. I'm kind of curious.
It is.
Probably not
That's
too many.
It's a very targeted market.
It is. Well, I have one thing before we go on to other things I wanted to show you. Do you see anything funny about my elbow here?
Yes.
Could you describe it?
Can I see the other one?
Yeah.
Yes, it's, it almost looks like it's facing the wrong direction.
Yeah, yeah. It's called a olecranon bursa. Actually, a bursitis in
it's
the
bursitis.
Elbow.
Bursitis. You know what? I had that last weekend too.
And really?
Mine was diagnosed by a doctor.
Really?
Mine turned a completely different color. The whole circular part of my elbow was a different color.
Seriously? Mm-hmm. But did it expand like this?
No, it didn't. But that's like the next step.
Mine looks like a bubble of.
It does. It does.
You know, it's funny looking.
And my friend was saying that he's a doctor and he actually took a needle and just pierced it himself in his own arm when
really?
He had that.
Mm-hmm. Because.
It can get really big. Like, it can get, like, the size of a grapefruit.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
It's been about the same size for a week. And I have...
Oh, it's warm. It's warm, and it feels like fluid, everybody. Okay, this is Jeff's elbow.
Yeah, it feels like fluid.
Uh-huh.
It's really
it does.
Weird.
It's not hard, like an elbow is.
No, there's fluid in there.
Yeah, there is fluid.
And that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I have a, you know, my lady friend is a doctor, so
that's right.
I'm in pretty good shape.
She going to burst it for you?
She checks it all the time. Mm-hmm. No, actually, the advice is if it gets warm and red and painful, which is not painful at all, that means it's infected and you take antibiotics. When it's not infected, you just take Motrin or ibuprofen of some sort.
Right.
In 3 weeks, it should be gone.
Right.
There's no piercing. In fact, they don't recommend piercing because, so I'm surprised your doctor friend pierced it.
It got way bigger than that, though. It was huge.
Yeah.
It was huge.
Yeah.
It was in a way, actually.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's what, I guess that's a surgical procedure. But they don't like to do that because you have to cut through a lot of skin to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not at the surface, really.
Mm-hmm.
And the body absorbs the fluid, ultimately. So how did I get it? You know, I don't know. Most people get it by banging themselves somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I do this all the time at the gym. I'll like go between pieces of equipment and bang myself on something. So it's conceivable that I did that and don't remember. But I'm getting tired of it. It's just a pain.
Yep.
I mean, it doesn't hurt, which is a good thing. But and you didn't really know. You didn't notice it until I mentioned it. So
no,
I guess it's really
funny
not that,
that
noticeable.
It's the same thing that I have, but mine hasn't. I don't have the lump like yours, but it is. It is bursitis.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what happened with yours?
I don't know.
Just
I've had it
away?
For like 18 months, and it's been on and off. It hurts. So there you go.
Really?
Uh-huh. And I was amazed.
But that sounds infected if it changed colors.
It was a completely changed color. No.
Did you ever take antibiotics?
No. It wasn't burning or anything.
Yeah.
It feels like it's burning sometimes, but But he said the same thing, type ibuprofen. Yep.
My lady friend is a ER attending at Parkland, so I mean, she sees everything, and she's seen this millions of times.
Right.
But even she decided to talk to a sort of an expert on this, and same advice. Same advice on the internet, same advice from her, and same advice from her expert. And so that's good, you know. So
I think it doesn't hurt.
The main thing I asked her at this point is, and she's going to get more advice, is just at what point do I need to do something different than taking ibuprofen? Because I've been doing that. And like I said, for the past week, it's about the same.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Isn't that wild? The same
thing. Yeah, it's weird.
And it's an elbow thing.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's like it's on the other side, outside of the elbow, just for those wondering.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, maybe you should take a picture, Jeff, and post it.
I was thinking about it. It's gross.
It is a funny looking thing.
It's a funny looking thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But nobody, and we're lucky in our lives to have medical opinions right now, right next to us, but nobody is saying like it's anything serious.
Yeah.
You know.
So any other problems that you want to share with the listeners?
No, everything else is just rosy.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Good. Hey, so you know what NASA's developed, which I actually thought this was very interesting.
I don't know. What has NASA developed?
Well, I don't know. Have you been hearing that NASA now wants to go, they've set their sights on Mars, like they actually want to make a landing on Mars. And there's been a lot of naysayers about, it's too expensive, we can't afford it, we're in an economic downturn, we have this huge debt, blah, 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 blah. So a lot of people are saying, no, we really shouldn't reach out and do that. But when you stop and look at the products that we've gotten and what NASA has done for our lives, I think we just all should say thank you, NASA, because this is really pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Besides those disposable diapers and memory foam used in beds and pillows, NASA has developed, you'll be surprised when you hear this, the smoke detector.
Oh.
Isn't that amazing? It was designed for Skylab in the early 70s to alert crew members of unexpected fumes.
Makes sense.
Black & Decker developed cordless tools at the request of NASA. So next time you pick up your cordless drill, you can thank NASA, because that was the application that actually put it on the map. It was 1971, and they needed battery-powered instruments to allow the astronauts to collect lunar samples during spacewalks. They've also designed, as you probably remember from last year's Olympics, the Speedo laser swimsuit, which virtually takes all friction out of the equation of swimming. And that's what was so controversial. But they did break 15 records, or a dozen world records were broken because of that swimsuit. Designed by NASA, it was invented for space travel to eliminate chafing on spacewalks. So you just have to say, oh, the other thing, orthopedic braces, nickel and titanium memory metal, known as nitinol, was developed initially for aerospace uses, and it's now replaced steel dental braces. So everybody who's wearing braces today can thank NASA.
I have heard that there were a lot of material science that was done that,
that had to be done,
the benefits
wouldn't have happened.
Right.
And in NASA, I think in NASA's charter, it says anything that they design has to be made available to the public.
Oh, wow.
Fogless goggles, if you're a skier. So if you've got fogless goggles, you can thank NASA.
Huh.
They again developed those for spacecraft windows so they could take off and enter reentry. The ear thermometer, if you're a parent and you know what it's like to not have to use a standard mercury-filled thermometer, an ear thermometer was designed for NASA for infrared sensing cameras to detect heat signatures.
Wow.
You know, the old space pen? That was developed for 1968 space mission by Fisher. Space pen.
That was the one that wrote upside down.
It writes upside down, right. And it's previously gravity would pull the ink down, but this one was pressurized at all times. So that's why you didn't need gravity.
Neat.
Thermal boots and gloves. So if you get any thermal boot or glove, which are heated for cold weather wear, that's from NASA.
Wow.
And here's one that I really had no clue. Handheld video cameras. They were designed for NASA. Before the astronauts to photograph themselves.
Yeah.
Calculators and PCs. In 1966, IBM had to come up with, for the Gemini 11 flight, they had to come up with a computer the size of a shoebox, and those chips became the basis for pocket calculators and personal computers. Swipe cards. That was one of the most amazing ones. That every credit card you have right now has a swipe system on the back, and that was designed for NASA's onboard computer systems. So they could recognize data coming from different sources. Isn't
How
that great?
Neat.
Isn't that
is
absolutely
that's
amazing?
That's pretty amazing.
I think we just have to thank NASA, and I think we have to rethink, you know, what is the price that space travel really has?
Well, here's the deal on the space travel. I think the one controversial thing, or the I shouldn't say the one, there's a lot of controversial things when it comes, when something costs a lot of money to develop, is besides those indirect benefits, there may very well be some direct benefits in doing all this research to get the to get a probe to Mars, but do we really need it to be filled with a man?
And
the question I've heard a lot is, you know, we have robots that can see better than a man.
Right.
We have robots that can make decisions better than a man.
You man or woman? You mean human? Humans.
Yeah. Humans. Well, you know.
Jeff, I'm going to hit you in the elbow.
Oh, no. Bust my bursa. So, you know, we have robots that can hear better than a person. I mean, almost
all the... So you're saying, should we send a robot?
Well, or a robot, or when I say robot, I don't mean like 3CPO. You know what I mean? Just a sensing unit of some sort to do whatever it is we need a man to do. So the whole point is...
Because it's safer?
Because it's safer, and it probably costs extra money to put a man on there.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Can we just get out of the man space business? Is that really necessary?
Well, we have sent a lot of unmanned probes to Mars.
No, that's true.
Yeah. And they've landed, and don't we have Mars samples of Mars soil?
So why do we need to spend a lot of money sending a man there?
I don't know. We should research that further.
I know.
What their goal is to send a man.
Or a woman. Well, what do you think about the healthcare debate?
Yeah, I was actually going to lead into that with what I was going to talk about next.
Well,
yeah.
I think we both have stuff.
Are you talking
on that.
About the snippets that we've all seen this past week of the angry, angry town hall meetings?
Yeah. Well, you know, some observations
which
I made
are not indicative of all of them.
Right.
Probably are not indicative of
right.
all of them.
couple of things here. I my general comment, and I've got some things here that I wanted to talk about with the French system.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a not completely workable here because they do can have different lives. You know, they are healthier in general. But there are a lot of things that seem that we could benefit from that system.
And France, by the way, has the number one healthcare system in the world.
Rated by the World Health Organization.
Right.
And we're number 37.
Right. And we spend, what, $7,000 a person, and they spend four.
Yeah.
And the disparity is really great, what we spend per person versus what other countries spend.
I've got that actually here. So where is it?
We're 17th or something in spending. We spend a lot compared to the rest of the world.
Yeah, I have that statistic someplace. Well, I'll get into it.
Okay.
I'll get into it. I've got that statistic exactly. But a couple comments here just on the debate that I've got is that I do think that whatever policy we craft is that we do need some sort of tax breaks or benefit or incentive for people that are living healthy lives. Now, mm-hmm. I say that, I don't mean that if you're overweight, you should have to pay more of a burden. I don't think that at all. But I think if you're overweight and you're doing things that are not healthy, you know, and I don't know how you measure that exactly, but there is a sense of, it seems like fairness, that someone who exercises and eats nutritionally, following the food pyramid or whatever, balanced meals and so forth, and has a focus on prevention, then that should be rewarded behavior because that ultimately cuts down health costs for us all. So I think somehow that has to be part of the plan. And
do they do that in France? I know they do it in Japan. The doctor takes your measurements in Japan.
I don't think they do that in France from what I saw.
And in England, the doctor is incentivized to make sure that you are having a healthy lifestyle. The doctor,
yeah.
If the doctor can get people off of high blood pressure medication, I mean, the doctor gets rewards for doing things like that.
Right, right. And the other thing is, I just can't help, and I'm sure you feel this way, that all this, you know, these snappy one-liners, these town hall meetings, the politicizing that even, I shouldn't say even, but that the politicians are doing to make this thing so night and day, black and white, I think this gets in the way of us actually coming up with a good decision. Because I think if you lined up, this is my inclination on a lot of issues, but I think if you lined up all the things that we want out of a healthcare system,
mm-hmm.
reduced costs for business, healthcare for all,
mm-hmm.
easier to get healthcare when you're between jobs, so forth and so on,
right.
and good quality healthcare and competitive pricing.
Right.
I don't think Democrats or Republicans would disagree with any of what I just said.
Right.
So it's a matter of implementing those policies.
How do we go about doing
and
it?
Understanding the trade-offs between the things and making measured, good dialogue. But this stuff about, I'm losing America, I don't want to live in this America.
I know.
What the hell does
or
that
Obama
mean?
Obama is Hitler, or we're going to kill grandma with
so
the death panels.
This doesn't help. And it just gets in the way because people get stuck on it. And
mm-hmm.
then, you know.
The public option. We're all stuck on the public option. As Obama said, it's one small part of the whole plan. So,
right. Well, mm-hmm. I just.
So, what else does France do that they're doing right?
Well, let's go back. I just wanted to say something. Obama was in one of the town halls yesterday, and I thought he had some pretty interesting things to say that I think deserve a little bit of discussion. You know, he first of all criticized those that said they're using the debate to scare tactics, and he says, "What you can't do, or you can but you shouldn't, is start saying that things like we want to set up death panels to pull the plug on grandma." He said, referring to rumors.
Mm-hmm.
So the notion that somehow I ran for public office or members of Congress are in this so that they can go around and pulling the plug on grandma, when you start making arguments like that, it's simply dishonest.
It is dishonest. It's end-of-life counseling is what it is.
Right.
And it's been in Chuck Grassley's bill. Actually, Sarah Palin signed it into law in 2008 in Alaska, which is so ironic.
It's simple.
Come on, everybody.
It's simple recognition. You know, I'm a big, big proponent of the 80-20 law. And like, I don't want to say 80% of all health care costs go into sort of the end of life period, but it's something like that. So, gee, it probably makes sense to focus on that period and understand how can we reduce costs
have
in that period.
Well. Yeah, have a living will.
So it's just blind to say, oh, they want death committees, and then to ignore this. It doesn't make any sense. Again, the politics is getting in the way of actually solving real problems. Because one of the things that we must demand from Washington on this healthcare is that, in my opinion, costs either go down or they're at least scalable to a certain extent. At least there are linear costs. But right now they're just spiraling up. And we can't have that. We need a solution that is cheaper. And I think part of it is focusing on the end of life. I do. And that's not killing grandma. It's saying that maybe grandma doesn't get a hip replacement because she's got a terminal disease. Maybe something like that. But then, you know, it's not that simple. But, one of the students at the University of Colorado pressed Obama on whether the government would take an unfair advantage against insurance companies that have a profit to survive. And I think this is a very good and interesting question, because it's one of the concerns I have as well. Goes towards my objective of we do still want the elements, the great elements of a free marketplace, right? And Obama said such a plan's purpose would be to keep the insurance companies honest by creating competition, not run them out of business. And he also suggested that there's no final decision has been made. And I think this is the most interesting point, because people are like, oh, I hate Obamacare. Well, there's no policy yet. Mm-hmm. Obama said such a plan's purpose would be to keep the insurance companies. Okay. He also suggested that no final decision has been made on whether to keep the public option in the final bill at all. He said, this is a legitimate debate to have. All I'm saying, though, is that the public option, whether we have it or don't have it, is not the entirety of healthcare reform. Right. It's just one sliver of it, one aspect of it. And by the way, it's both the right and the left that have become so fixated on this that they forget everything else.
Right.
Good point, Obama.
Right.
Can we please get past this? You people out there, and I don't think I'm talking to our audience, sadly, but you people out there that are saying the stupid stuff, you're getting in the way of actually smart policy making. Please get out of the way. You know, and that really applies to the politicians more than anything else, because they're listening to it. Part of them is they have to listen to it. I get it. They've got constituents. They want to be, you know, reelected and so forth.
Right.
But God damn it, get out of the way and let the smart people come up and craft a decision that is lower cost, that is healthcare for all, that uses the free marketplace as much as possible, and it reduces the administrative
And you don't lose your health insurance for pre-existing conditions, and what is it, 60% of bankruptcies are because of medical conditions.
Right.
I mean, there's so many other factors.
Right.
It's just such a complicated
problem.
Here's
the last three things he says. There is no perfect, painless silver bullet out there that solves everyone's problems. It gives everyone's perfect health care for free. I wish there was. There's a lot to be said for that statement, Gretchen, because I firmly believe that intelligent discussion and policymaking has to do with understanding deeply the trade-offs associated with everything, and then making those trade-offs, not by being so one-sided that we're not going to get everything. What I can do is try to sort through where all the options are available, be realistic about where we're going on healthcare, and say to myself, if we keep on doing what we're doing, we're in a world of hurt. If health, this is again him talking, if healthcare reform fails, Medicare and Medicaid risk going broke, state and federal budgets will be unsustainable, and then we're going to have to make some really bad decisions when we have no good options.
Right.
All good points, fair points.
Within 10 years, Medicare and Medicaid will be bankrupt. So, you know, and those are the elderly. So look at, you know, how old our parents are now.
Right.
My mom's 70. She'll be around in 10 years.
Yeah.
So she's going to need that.
Yeah.
So
my message, and I've got Facebook friends that are like, you know, conservative that are all over this. They have these simple little things they say, how they hate Obama and Obamacare. And I say, get out of the way. I know you're not as intelligent as the rest of us, but get out of the way and let the smart people make some good measured decision making.
They have a right to be heard, but they don't have a right to spread flat out lies. That's the part that I think is very unfortunate.
I know.
It doesn't do any good to talk about death panels. Nobody's talking about death panels.
I know. And I think Sarah Palin gets credit for one of the first ones to sort of suggest that.
But it was interesting.
Shame on her.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that in a law in 2008, she urged Alaskans to have end-of-life counseling, which is the exact wording that's used in the current proposed House legislation that she's writing about and calling it death panels.
Right.
So talk about hypocritical.
It's hypocritical because it's political, and she wants to be political about it. And so my point is, by being political about it, you're not helping solve our problem.
Mm-hmm.
So cut it out.
I think.
Damn it.
I think you're upset about this, Jeff.
It just seems so obvious to me, you know?
Well, what I thought was kind of interesting is that these people who were standing up at these meetings, they're really upset about politicians in general and about spending. So let's talk just 1 minute about the debt, because I thought this was actually very interesting. Let's talk about the $11 trillion debt. Okay,
yep.
Trillion has 12 zeros. It's an 11 with 12 zeros, just to be clear about what we're talking about. The actual first national debt happened in 1790, when the U.S. assumed $75 million in war debt to fund the Continental Congress. So our founding fathers actually were the ones that started the debt. Alexander Hamilton was the one that believed in a debt.
Right,
So it's now $11.5 trillion. That equates to $37,000 for every man, woman, and child in this country, which is not even sustainable to think that everybody could pay $37,000 to clear that debt.
Right.
It is something that is a huge concern. And yes, people are standing up and saying, we're expanding it by more than $1 trillion a year. Well, okay, it didn't just happen overnight. Let's just remember we had a war that went on for 8 years that's been very expensive that we probably technically didn't afford. So what's going to actually pay for it? Is it going to be higher taxes or reduced federal benefits or a combination of both? So that's clearly complicating Obama's life. And that's one of the questions for this, besides the public option, is like, how is this going to be funded? How do you cover 46 million Americans that don't have it? Who pays for it?
Right.
Right. So interest payments on the debt are the number fourth highest federal expenditure. The first is Medicare, followed by Medicaid. So Medicare is for the older people. Medicaid is for poor people and disabled people. Social Security is third, again, for older Americans, which it will be bankrupt in 2037. So right when we need it, we'll have no money.
Yep.
Okay, so that's 2037. And then the next is the defense budget. And then fourth is interest payment on the debt is $452 billion last year alone. So those are the five greatest expenditures in the federal budget.
Yeah.
So Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, defense, and then interest on the debt. Those are the five top ones.
Wow.
And clearly that's why Obama is saying we have to do something now, because Medicare and Medicaid are not sustainable.
I did not realize Medicare and Medicaid were that high on the list.
The first two, yeah. Wow. And then third was Social Security, which, you know, George Bush did try to reform. He tried to do
right.
something with Social
right.
Security. But the hard topics, they're hard for a reason. Clearly, this is the reason. And then, you know, you have people standing up at these meetings saying, keep government out of my Medicare. Well, government is your Medicare.
Yeah, that
hello,
doesn't make
you
any
stupid
sense.
Person.
<I know. laughs>
Do you not realize it's a government program? Oh, my Lord. That's when you have to go, people, please try to be educated.
Right, right.
So that is the national debt. But here's what I get confused about, is that the deficit is what happens every year. And so we have a yearly deficit, which is now at $1.85 trillion.
Okay.
So the deficit is yearly, and whereas the debt is the accumulated total. So that's
right.
Our overall debt is 80% of our annual output. During World War II, the debt grew to 120% of the GDP. But that was a really extraordinary circumstance. Obviously, it was a war. We're not the only nation that has this national debt. Japan, Italy, India, France, Germany, and Canada have comparable debts as percentage of their GDP. So we're not the only ones in this boat. And then some of these countries we've just talked about are the ones that have amazing health care. They
yeah.
rank number 1 through 6.
Yeah.
And yes, they have a higher tax rate for the most part than we do.
Mm-hmm.
But still, they're in the exact same boat that we are. So, and the debt is financed, just FYI, through the sale of treasury bonds and bills. And the primary buyer of those bonds and bills is China. So that's why
yeah.
we have this in very intricately complicated
relationship
with China.
With them, exactly.
We have to have it. They make our goods and they buy our bonds, so they finance our debt. So, you know, it's a complicated situation, but that is the whole sort of history of the debt. And yes, it's growing faster than it has ever. And yes, that is bothering a lot of people. And yes, we're leaving this legacy, but it didn't happen overnight. That's the other thing. You know, everybody seems to make it sound like, oh, well, look at Obama. He's raising the debt. Well, it was there.
Right.
It was there. And the deficit was zero when Clinton left office. Just
right.
Remember, he left the budget surplus for that year. And the only time we were debt-free was in 1834, 1835. We actually cleared ourselves of debt 1834, which is what, 100 and, you know, not that long ago, 100
right.
and, what, 70 years ago? Well, I can't do the math that fast,
right.
but
right.
yeah, so that is, so however that happened, it had happened, but... Interesting story about debt, huh?
Very interesting story. Mm-hmm. Well, here's on the France thing. I wanted to talk about some of the pluses and minuses.
France.
So, as I said, France is number one, according to the World Health Organization's healthcare rating. U.S. is 37, slightly above Cuba, and one notch behind Slovenia. Or one notch above Slovenia.
Above Slovenia,
yay!
Yeah. We beat Slovenia.
Their infant death is 3.9 per 1,000 live births compared to 7 that we have. Average life expectancy is 79.4, which is 2 years more than in the United States. They have more hospital beds and more doctors per capita than America and far lower rates of death from diabetes and heart disease. Now, they're having some troubles, too. They are having some healthcare problems. So they're wrestling with some things, and they're looking at...
And they have a hybrid system, right?
They do have a hybrid system, yeah. So France is considering like a U.S.-style health maintenance organization to rein in some of the costs. Still, 65% of French citizens express satisfaction with their system compared to 40% of U.S. So they are happier with it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what you had just alluded to. France spends 10.7% of its GDP on healthcare while we're laying out 16%.
16%, right.
So now, I'm never be one to say that things are simple. We can't just... Be France.
Right, yeah, we can't.
But I'm saying there's some room for improvement
sure.
here, right? Which I think is very encouraging.
Right.
Yeah.
But you hear that too, that the misnomer out there, we have the best system in the world. That's being spread, and that is completely not true.
Right.
We don't have the best system.
Right. I'm sure you could pick out a lot of elements of where the U.S. has the best health care. I'm sure we probably have the best cardiac. Certain specializations.
Yes,
I'm sure that's absolutely true.
Right.
But as far as systematic thing,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know how the WHO, you know, does
looks
their ranking and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the problem. Here's the interesting trade-off of this. To make this affordable, France reimburses its doctors at a far lower rate than U.S. physicians would expect. Now, there are some good things here. However, French doctors don't have to pay back their crushing student loans because medical school is paid for. And malpractice insurance premiums are a tiny fraction of the $55,000
right.
a year that
there
many U.S. doctors pay.
Mm-hmm.
French doctors make about net income after insurance and all that is about $55,000, which is about a third of what their American counterparts earn. But then again, the French government pays two-thirds of the Social Security tax for most French physicians, a tax that's typically 40% of income. If you're a specialist who has worked at one of these public hospitals... Oh, there's my phone, who have worked at one of these public hospitals for 4 years, you can start to charge whatever you want. And but still they say American-style compensation is rare. There is a quote here from one of the doctors. He said, there's an unspoken, undefined limit to what you can really charge. So they kind of have more of a, you know, social aspect to things. So anyways.
But their system is not run by the... insurance companies,
right.
whereas ours, I keep hearing
right.
doctors say that their actions are dictated by insurance companies now. The
right.
insurance company says yes or no if they can do that procedure or not.
Right, right.
Based on whether they're going to pay. So it's not the doctor making the decision.
Right,
the insurance
right.
company does have a foot in your... Everybody's worried about the government having a foot in your health care. Well, right now your insurance company dictates your health care. So what's better?
Yeah, and one of the things the French are working on right now is that apparently if you're a doctor and you're scheduling more tests, you get paid a little bit more. So you sort of are incentivized right now by scheduling more tests and more procedures, which they're trying to correct, obviously. They
right.
they need to correct that.
Mm-hmm.
So all I'm saying is we're not France. We're not going to adopt their system. We have some room for improvement, and
right.
there's some things there that seem to work.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can adopt some of those things. Clearly, the French live in a different fashion than we do.
Right.
They are generally, they eat healthier. They generally walk more. And that's why I'm kind of saying I think it would be nice to incentivize that behavior in our new healthcare process.
And the English are very satisfied with their system, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Even conservative English members of parliament wouldn't give up their system.
Yeah.
They're very pleased with it.
And, yeah.
You know, but there's flaws with every system.
There's flaws with every system.
Can it be worse than where we are now, since it's unsustainable where we are now?
No.
And that's what everybody's saying. It's 10 years. you know, the alarm clock runs out for Medicare and Medicaid.
And we have so many different models now to look for.
Right.
We can identify all those pluses and minuses, potentially come up with a hybrid. That's world class.
It's just change. Everybody's resistant to change.
And politics, it gets in the way.
Because if most of us have health care insurance from our employer,
right,
and we haven't had a catastrophic illness, and
right,
then we aren't, you know, facing foreclosure.
And I don't want to kill grandma.
No. Well, I bet she thanks you for that. But yeah, it's something else. Well,
yeah.
Well, of course it's tough, and you know, I got to at least pat Obama on the back. I mean, Clinton tried, and all the stars were aligned when he tried to do it, and it went down in flames. And let's just hope it doesn't happen this time, because we can't afford it to happen.
I don't see how
we can't afford it to happen. When
right,
you hear those numbers of where the debt dollars go.
And by the way, did you see the Bill Maher show last Friday?
I saw, yeah, part of it.
So he had...
he had the insurance industry exec, 20 years in insurance. And that man had a lot to say.
Yeah.
And he was definitely for a public option.
Right. And also, what I thought was interesting, he had the Republican House member from California, Issen.
Oh, that was last week, yeah. I was talking about this week's.
Oh, okay.
Issa.
And Issa. And he said something that made everybody applaud. You know,
yes,
Bill Maher's audience is primarily liberal. And he basically said, you know, if you look, and I think what he said was oversimplified, because I don't think it can be that simple. He said, if you look at what we have as public employees, we could give that to everybody and it wouldn't cost very much. And it's a great service. People really like it. And problem solved. And that's very much of a public option. This is from a conservative House member.
Mm-hmm.
So there is room here to work.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If we can just get away from this crappy rhetoric, yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think the town hall forum maybe isn't the best for disseminating information or taking questions. Maybe
right,
maybe that's a bit outdated too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the people that go aren't your average Joe. They're the people that are really pissed.
If you notice, they're all, Bill Maher did comment, they're all old white fat people. Have you noticed who's there? And you notice when they have them, there were a few on Saturdays, but mainly they're in the middle of the week when who's going to be there but people who are somewhat retired, who can, you know, they're not primarily the working class.
Right.
He's out there at their job when they're having their town hall meeting.
And they've got something to vent, some chip on their shoulder.
Yeah, and they've gotten emails that, you know, say, go out and say this, this, and this. I mean, it's been, I don't know.
Right.
It's very kind of frustrating, but then the media is picking up on it, so the media is, you know, they're also criticizing the media.
Right. Well, yeah, so they exasperate the problem. All right, we need to go out to our little remote report from the Cowboy Stadium. So
yeah, okay.
All right. So here we are in line. They've told us it was going to be a 1.5 hour wait to wait for this freaking. That better be worth it.
I'm surprised how many people are here.
There is it's Sunday. And there's no Cowboy game in town.
True, but there are hundreds of people here. Hundreds, right? If they take groups of 50 and we are hours away, there have got to be at least 300 people in front of us.
Yeah, yeah. So they've got us winding around the pro shop. I imagine that is...
Conveniently winding around the pro shop.
Conveniently, so we can buy lots of goods.
Uh-huh.
So we have two friends with us. So how excited are you guys about the 1 hour wait? 2 hour wait.
I couldn't be more thrilled. Okay. The ability to hang out here with all the Dallas Cowboy paraphernalia, that's a chance of a lifetime.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd rather see cheerleader memorabilia.
Ah, I'd rather see cheerleaders.
I have several friends from high school that were cheerleaders.
For the Cowboys?
Yes.
Seriously?
From Girl Team and Cheerleading in Plano to Dallas Cowboys.
Really?
Yes.
Are they still with the Cowboys?
They're trained. Been trained since they were 5 years old.
Wow. That's
like
impressive.
Yeah.
Wow. They aspired to be Cowboys cheerleaders.
Yes.
Huh.
You get to travel. They had a travel team. So, you know, you get to travel overseas and stuff. So, yeah.
Very, very cool. All right. Well, anybody you can introduce me to? Ba-dum-bum.
What?
Anybody you can introduce me to?
No. They're all married now.
To Cowboy players?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, since we're just seeing nothing but merch in front of us, we're going to talk about merchandise. Right now, we're sitting next to some shot glasses. What's been the most interesting thing you've seen so far?
I was surprised to see the Cowboys grill.
No, I didn't see the grill.
It was an actual Cowboys grill.
Wow.
And a caution Cowboys fan zone yellow traffic sign with a working light, which is also pretty interesting. Looks like they've left no bays of the Cowboys unturned. Oh, look, and the Tony Romo action figure.
Hey, that is very nice. Do they have a Jessica Simpson one?
Only
$12.99. And here's a little Cowboys princess pink
princess mug
for a Cowboys princess in your life. They really, I would imagine they have here pretty much anything you'd ever want or not want.
Really big store, actually. It's like thousands of square feet loaded with just Cowboys merchandise.
Well, and they have us looping through this big pro shop.
We get to see all aspects of it.
And it's very clever on them because we're moving.
Yes, we're moving.
But we get to see the whole store. Mm-hmm. And also, we do feel like we get to move, which is better than just standing here. So there's always a new piece of merch in front of us. And here's like a, what is that thing? It's like a
light up mug?
It's a light up.
Light up beer mug.
Okay, so there's a flashing, colorful light going off and on in the bottom of this beer mug.
Like mug.
Weird.
Okay,
does anybody look at that and just say, I need to have that?
Well, I think they're selling, judging by how few are up here.
Yeah. And you made a comment earlier, they even have sales racks.
Yes, they already have sale racks.
The place just opened up.
Right, and they've got red line.
Why would they put anything on sale? It's not even like season yet. They don't know what's going to sell and what's not going
to
sell.
Because they've got new hats coming in and they're trying to get rid of those hats at $10.
Yeah.
So, it's very nicely merchandised.
Oh, look at that. Dallas Cowboys backpack.
Packs, games, Connect Four game.
All
Cowboys
the
versus Redskins.
Action figures. Cowboys Stadium neck thingy, Bobby.
Books and DVDs.
Travel pillow, that's what it does. Yep, books and DVDs. Keychains. It is pretty exciting. I know, we looked at that. Is that on your wish list?
It's a disco in a cup.
It is. When drinking beer is just not party enough.
They've done a really good job of hiding the prices.
It's a chew toy.
Yeah, they just wanted to get that impulse buyer.
Yeah.
It's called the glow mug.
I don't see a price on them anywhere.
Yeah. Wow. $12.99 for the glow mug.
Oh, there it is.
And they're moving like hotcakes, folks. Come get them while they're hot. Oh, look at this. We got the fancy drinkware collection. These, by the way, are collectible.
That's right.
They say collectible on them just so that you know.
They're in a presentation gift box.
Yes.
For $24.99.
And what you get is this, glass beer mug and a shot glass.
With a medallion on it that says Cowboy Stadium Inaugural Season 2009.
And that's what must make it
a
collectible.
That makes it a collectible.
Wow. That will be worth probably millions.
Yeah, there you go. It's like about $2 worth of product.
Yes. Full-size footballs, Dallas Cowboys, kicking tee included.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
There's more youth.
Yep. Those are pretty small.
Why are people shopping?
Well, are they shopping because they really want stuff, or are they bored waiting in line? Hey, look at that. Nice telephone. Oh, that's for a golfer. Nice. Little golf club cover with the Cowboys on it. Pretty much you got anything with the Cowboys.
If you like the Cowboys.
Wait, is that a phone? Or is that a phone? No, calculator.
Yeah, guess that. Isn't it? Stapler?
Oh, my God. It's a calculator stapler that looks like footballs. Can anything more say more cheesy? So we're sitting down right now in the bleachers. I guess we're going to get probably some sort of talk about the... there's a group ahead of us down there by the field level. The field right now is just pavement. We can see the big screen in the middle. It's pretty cool. They have the...
looks like they're getting ready for a concert.
Yeah, looks like they are. They have the roof closed, but it is like a translucent type of material, so it still lets sun shine in. So let's see, what time is it now? It's 3:30. This would be a typical time?
Right, you'd be here for a game.
Yeah, you could be here for a game, so... It's not a bad seat. We're in the second level, it looks like. Right. It's really not a horrible seat. We're way in the end zone, but it doesn't look that bad.
Where are the box seats? Right up here, right? Those are all boxes?
You've got boxes underneath every level.
Okay.
And even down underneath that lowest level on the bottom.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah.
And the boxes, what, were 100,000 something to start with? They were really high.
Yeah, I don't know. I bought 5 of them the other day. I didn't even look at the price. That's how rich I am. All right, step one of the tour is done. We basically sat in a bleacher seat in the second level, and we got sort of an introduction to what the tour is going to be, and then we got released to go to the bathroom and to get concessions if we want them, and to get the 2009 commemorative glass filled with Pepsi.
Container, yeah.
You said you're surprised that it's Pepsi and not Coke.
Yeah, and he even said Coke. Remember, he kept saying Coke.
But see, you wonder if they use it in the generic or not.
Yeah, but it's not. Pepsi folks would be really pissed if they knew that the tour guys were saying, go get a Coke and get a commemorative mug.
So if there is any Pepsi people out here listening...
You better clear that up with the tour guides. Yeah. So now we're waiting 20 minutes, and the theory is everybody has to go to the bathroom now because you're not allowed to go during the tour.
Yeah.
So...
I didn't really like our tour guide too much. He just... I don't know. I didn't like his attitude. Just sort of... kind of... trying to be funny, but not really. And anyway, so that's step one. Now we're waiting in a line to get a bottle of water, but we might just go. It doesn't seem to be moving real fast.
Yeah.
And we're wondering if it's still $6 as it was reported to be, I guess, a little bit earlier.
At the George Strait concert, I heard it was really, stuff was really expensive. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. All right, so we'll report back.
Hey, now that we're back from the Cowboy Stadium, something good actually did happen this week. I know we've been talking about the town meetings, but Obama gave out the highest civilian honor at the White House this week, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, to 16 deserving individuals. And Dallas native Nancy Brinker, some of you may know her. She's the founder of the Susan G. Komen Foundation for Breast Cancer, which has gotten $1.5 billion in donations since its inception in 1982. She was awarded with this medal. And I didn't realize it, but it was founded because she promised her dying sister that she would help other families deal with breast cancer. And so she laid awake at night trying to figure out how to do this, and she started with $200 and a list of friends. And I just thought that was actually pretty amazing that now she's promoting breast cancer research and education all over the world. It started in the United States, but it's become a worldwide organization. She's now a U.S. ambassador. She's a chairwoman of the President's Cancer Panel. She's a World Health Organization Goodwill Ambassador. And she's just done a lot of good as just, starting with very small $200 to help, not forget her sister. So I thought that was that was actually pretty sweet. And other people,
very inspiring.
Other people who got it, just people you'll know, Stephen Hawking, Billie Jean King, Senator Ed Kennedy, Muhammad Yunus, the founder of microloans, and Sidney Poitier, and Sandra Day O'Connor, and Harvey Milk. So those are some of the people is happy.
Well, sounds like she's in a very good good company there.
Yeah, very good company. So
very good.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to do the show. We're going to play a couple voicemails on the way out, and we'll see you next time. I think we'll do it more frequently. We always say that, but
we will. All righty. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hi, this is Ken from Honolulu. Missed you guys. Gosh, I thought you had given up podcasting. You've been gone for so long. I put you guys along with... Wait, don't tell me on NPR for some of your new stuff, because they come up with some interesting stuff, too. I sure hope you don't keep it another couple of months next time. Thank you. Bye.
Michelle from Portland, Oregon. My building does not have stairway to the second floor. It has a stairway, but it's only available for a fire exit going down, so you have to take the elevator up. The door is open, but you can't go up to the second floor. So that's why people take the elevator. A lot of buildings, especially professional buildings, do not allow you to walk up one floor. So basically, you have to take the elevator. And I love your show, so keep it up. Bye-bye.